The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada. From the IEO waste on the western borders, I'm Hugh Hewitt. I've removed the winter quarters. Thanks to Ed Morrissey, who sat in for me yesterday. Did a wonderful job. I think there was some Steelers talk, so we have to air the place out and open the windows and fumigate. But I'm back to the IEO waste for a good many months. There is a time to be inside the Beltway, and there's a time to flee the Beltway. This is a time to flee the Beltway. Dutifully, as I fled yesterday, the Beltway, I took with me Ken Follett's new novel, Never. I cannot recommend this book highly enough because it may be the second major novel about how the Chinese government works. The first being 2034, but that's a narrow look inside the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and a broader scope, Admiral Stav Reedus and Elliot Ackerman, on how the military works at sea in the CCP. What Ken Follett's book Never does is take you inside how the Chinese Communist Party works in 2021, soon to be 2022. And I cannot emphasize enough how we've needed books like this. Most of the West learned how Moscow worked, not from going to college and taking Stanley Hoffman or Henry Kissinger or anyone else who was talking about how the Soviets worked. And most of what they thought was wrong, where they read the long telegram by Mr. X, who turned out to be George Kennan early on in the Cold War. No, they weren't Nixon. They weren't studying the briefing papers. They weren't Jimmy Carter, who had an inordinate fear of communism. None of that, all those years of the Cold War, that's not how people learned in America. They read Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News and World Report, and they would routinely report on what was going on, or so they thought, or so correspondents in Moscow thought. And now people have watched the Americans, and they get a view of how sleepers worked, which isn't right. That's not how sleepers worked in the United States. They had lots of spies in the 1980s. That was one of my earliest jobs. If you're listening to Hugh Hewitt for the first time, I'm going to give you the quick bio in a second. But after the wall came down and the Soviet Union crumbled, people sort of put their communism studies away, thinking, oh, well, the Chinese are simply evolving to a market capitalism society and we will help them get there and everything will be comfy, hunky-dory in the world. Bill Clinton let them into the world of free trade. We accepted them into the world's institutions. And in fact, they're still Leninists. And the country's difficult to understand. It's so big. It's so numerous. It's 1.3 billion people. And it's so opaque that very few novelists have dared to try and describe how the country works. Your New Year's resolution ought to be to read Never, which is a fine. I mean, it's a rollicking good novel. It's a great read. Ken Follett never disappoints. Ken Follett came to this, to the IEO Wasteland studio many, many years ago. And if you don't know what the IEO Wasteland is, that means you haven't read The Wheel of Time. And if you haven't read The Wheel of Time, and you haven't, even if you've watched the first series of The Wheel of Time, which will go on, I think, for 30 years, I don't think you get to the IEO Wasteland until season 3 or 4. I don't know how they're writing it. But the IEO Wasteland is basically my studio in the West. And it's where you learn how to do radio, in the IEO Wasteland. In any event, Follett came down to the IEO Wasteland a few years ago, and we had a great, rollicking 3-hour conversation. I'm going to ask Harley to post that over today as the last interview of the year. And so Ken Follett is he's a genius at narrative. He tells good stories. Good stories make for great novels. And he ranges all over the human canvas, and now he's ranged to the present day, and he's ranged to China and to Africa and to America. And in China, he's actually I am hardly a sinologist, but I know a lot of people who stayed at a Holiday Inn and speak Mandarin. I know O'Brien and Pompeo, you know, Secretary of State Pompeo. There are about 25 people running for president, and the two people who are most knowledgeable about the Soviet Union are Mike Pompeo and Robert O'Brien. Behind them is Matt Pottinger, Mary Kissel. There are a lot of people who know about the Soviet Union. I mean, about the Chinese Communist Party and the People's Republic of China. The one who knows the most who is running for president is Mike Pompeo. The one who knows the most who is in the Congress is Tom Cotton. So I think if China becomes the menace in people's mind that I suspect it will over the next 2 years, because they've unleashed this virus, which is everywhere and killing everyone and doing terrible things. It's not going to kill you if you've had your vaccines and your booster shot. You wear your mask on an airplane. If you do normal things, it's not going to kill you. If your children get it, it's very, very unlikely. Your children are much more likely to get hit by a car playing in the street than they are to die of COVID. They're much more likely to have a rare form of a terrible cancer. And lots of kids get sick, and it's very terrible. And I've been to the Children's Hospital here in Southern California often enough. There are two great ones in L.A. and Orange County, to know how sad it is, how terrible it is, how awful it is to have a child who's genuinely deeply sick. But it's very, very unlikely that it's going to be COVID that puts them there. So the Chinese did this to the world, and they don't care. They don't have a regretful bone in their body. And the Middle Kingdom thinks that they got screwed by the West for 200 years. And by the way, they did. They got screwed by the West for 200 years. And so they are about becoming the most powerful country in the world and issuing orders to the rest of the world. Dr. Kissinger himself told me they will never invade another country for the purposes of occupying it. They do invade when they need to, like Vietnam, they invaded in 79 or 80, I can't remember. And they took over Tibet because they thought it was theirs, and they're going to kill everyone in Xinjiang until they get rid of their Muslim problem. And they'll exploit Afghanistan, and they'll push the Russians back. Eventually, they'll push the Russians around. And they'll take over some islands, and they'll lay pressure on Japan, and they'll try and prop up North Korea. We know what they're going to do. Ken Follett explains how they do it and how we are now in a second Cold War and how it is very, very dangerous. So my reading yesterday was not news. There is no news. You know, I have here one article. U.S. hit with record number of new COVID-19 cases. One article, Wall Street Journal. And I have an invitation for you to call 1-800-520-1234. It's the last live show of the year. Tomorrow, December 31st, we play Dr. Larry Arnes of Hillsdale College, his part one of the March Through the History of Ideas, which we've been playing for years. And then on Monday, we play part two, and then we begin the new year. There will be some news by January the 3rd. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show, at the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Welcome back, America. I am grateful at the end of the year for guests who show up most weeks, including Dr. Michael Oren, who is our advance guard in Israel. Where it is, what time is it in Israel, Dr. Oren?
It is 10 of 2, the same time you talk to me every week.
Well, Happy New Year to you. I would like you to take a look ahead and give us the Michael Oren predictions for 2022.
You know, I always say I'm a historian and I have enough problems predicting the past. I live in the Holy Land, so I can be a little, I can indulge a little prophecy. I think that the Iranian nuclear issue is going to come to a head.
What's that mean? What do you mean come to a head?
Well, either I think the talks will either produce an agreement that Israel can't live with, or the Iranians will go ahead and keep on enriching to 60%, which is equivalent of threshold capacity, and Israel will not be able to live with that. So somewhere along the line, we're coming to a head on the nuclear issue with Iran. I think the COVID issue, I think here it's already beginning to clear up. We're going to be reopening our airport soon, you know, and we're just going to have to live with wave after wave after wave.
Are you going to do a fourth booster? Because I want a fourth booster to roll out in the United States immediately.
Yeah, they started rolling them out. It's not an aggressive campaign just yet because the Omicron numbers are actually, you know, they're increasing, but we found that, you know, that while it's highly contagious, it's not as lethal as the other versions and variants of COVID are. But yeah, I have no problem getting a fourth booster. Well, why not?
Why not? I mean, really, I get a flu shot every year. If I have to get two COVID shots a year, why not? I like being alive.
Yeah, why not? Good. I entirely agree with you. What's going to happen politically here? The government shows no signs of coming apart. It seems to be relatively stable. And, you know, nothing's going to move much on the Palestinian front unless the Biden administration intends to go ahead and try to reopen that American consulate in East Jerusalem, which would be cause a crisis here and cause a crisis in our relationship with Washington.
Now, I'm a little bit worried about our friends, Little Sparta, United Arab Emirates. They are going to cancel the F-35. I think Team Biden has screwed up our best Arab ally relationship. And if they don't get the F-35s and the drones, and I saw some people blaming Israel, which I do not believe to be the case for that.
I don't either.
What's going on there?
I know it has to do with internal politics in the United States. You know, Kissinger said of Israel that all of our politics are domestic. It's true of every country. It's certainly true of the United States of America.
Yeah. And, okay. Okay. Now I have a request.
I hope it goes through.
You know everybody in Israel. You know literally every. I can't walk down the street. I was having breakfast with Michael at the David Ben Gurion Hotel, and he had to greet like 55 people. We were having drinks. Really, it's like going to dinner with a parade. And so everyone comes by and they all say, so you must know whoever runs the Israeli Tourism Authority, right?
Yes, sure. Okay. I do. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I want you to tell them I want to broadcast from Israel for a month. I think that a goy like me coming to Israel and showing people that you not only can you have a great time, you can broadcast and it's perfectly safe would be good for tourism. But of course, they have to subsidize Salem sending me there. I don't want to make any money out of it. I just want them to pay Salem to bring me there so Salem doesn't complain. What do you think?
I think it's great. Not to mention I don't know if it's a competitor, but Dennis Prager broadcast here for a month.
I know that. We don't ever mention his show on this. Prager is. Right, I am his life coach. Did you know that?
They do it. And a lot of people have been here. Mark Levine's been here broadcasting.
Yeah, they bring all the Jews, and I said, no, bring a Catholic evangelical Presbyterian. We're the tourists. And
okay, and when our skies open up, I will run with that football.
All right, great. Now the other thing,
resolution for 2022.
About Dennis Prager, can we talk for a moment about Dennis? I am Dennis's life coach, and he has a new book called out The Rational Passover Haggadah. Now, I think that sounds like the worst named book in history, but I'm interested in it. What do you think?
It sounds good to me because, you know, I don't know what's irrational about the Haggadah.
That's exactly right. It's redundant.
Children of Israel left Egypt. They went to freedom. Okay, that's not such a wild tale, as far as I know. But okay, you know, we all love Dennis. So we'll see what he wrote.
When's your next book come out?
My next book is coming out probably in 2022. It's a novel. It's right now tentatively called Fourth Cliff. It's a murder mystery set on a Massachusetts island, 1944-1945, involving a police woman. That sounds redundant, a female police woman, who has to find a serial killer who's knocking off Italian prisoners of war.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Oh,
that's a movie. I like that. That's like the summer of 42 meets World War II movie.
Mayor of Easton.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mayor of Easton. I'm editing it now. It'll be coming out.
Last question. We have a minute. How many Chinese are in Israel, and does Israel view them with the alarm that they need to be viewed with?
There are many thousands of Chinese laborers here. Israel actually always wants more. They're building our two ports, or rebuilding our two ports. They're building a subway right across from where I'm talking to you. Many construction sites are, you know, emblazoned with Chinese. And in the morning, it looks like Shanghai here, everyone on bicycles and hard hats.
You know, they're planting listening devices in your subway.
Yeah, and that's what Americans. I have sat through meetings both in the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration, going way back, where America has told us, you know, unequivocally, that if we have this type of relationship with the Chinese, it's going to have a price to pay with the United States of America. And we have to, you know, thread that needle.
Let's talk about that in the new year. Happy New Year, Michael Oren. You're a valued and wonderful friend of the show. Have a great 2022. I'll be right back, America. Hour number two on Caller to Amnesty Day. Anybody can call on the Hugh Hewitt Show today. Stay tuned.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Joined now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. You know, if last week was the most wonderful time of the year, what does that make this week? As New Year's Eve approaches for each empty resolution, I think it only fitting I should make some restitution for things I vowed and promised with that champagne in my glass, by some sort of sad misfortune, simply haven't come to pass. I didn't write my novel like that C.J. Boxer fella. Huh. I'm even more ashamed I didn't manage a novella. I didn't write the lyric that would set the world ablaze. My fifth grade teacher had it right. Lazy's not a phase. I didn't study math again. I can't define congruent. There's no non-native language where I've learned to be more fluent. And though that borrowed treadmill daily from my backyard beckoned, I weigh what I weighed last year on January 2nd. I rooted for the teams that lost, hoping they'd be good again, and tuned into their next game, though I swore I never would again. Another year of thrift, wherein I spent more than I earned, a chapter in my memoir, which I've titled Lessons Learned. So after more than 60 years of musing and confusion, I've narrowed it all down to a remarkable conclusion. I've made one resolution, which I'll keep down to the letter. I promise to do little, but do it just a little better. That's New Year's Resolutions by Tarzana Joe.
That's an excellent way to resolve then the new year, Joe. It'll be posted at TarzanaJoe.com.
It will indeed.
Now, I don't know congruent either. Wasn't Nicolas Cage in that movie?
I'll check IMDb.
Yeah, and so there are no more Christmas presents to buy, so they can't buy your poetry books, but they could buy...
Oh, wait a minute. You know,
they could... I was going to say... That's it. It's a New Year's gift. A year in verse ahead. What could be worse, and what could be better? And so head over, if you have a poetry need for 2022, get them in early. Write
That's
to Tarzana
right.
Joe at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. Do you have a full larder of requests as the year opens, Joe?
I do have, but that would be a great New Year's resolution. Give the poet more than a week's notice.
Yeah, that is actually important, especially if you're going to be doing a toast at a wedding. Tarzana Joe, Happy New Year to you. Talk to you in 2022.
Very good. Happy New Year.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you haven't seen it, gold is going up. Why? Because inflation is going up. It's at 1808 when I begin putting this ad together. And I want you to know that Birch Gold is the company that you turn to if you want to buy gold. Just text Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 989898. That's Hugh to 989898 to roll over a portion of your IRA into precious metals. A week ago Monday, the tax court ruled that you can't do a gold or precious metals IRA from home. They will come in and tax you. You need Birch Gold if you're going to do that. You can go to Hugh Gold, or you can just text my name, Hugh, to 989898. Because right now, inflation is knocking at the door of the world. And that's when you want to be in precious metals. That's when you want 5 to 10% of your retirement with Birch Gold. HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 989898. That's Birch Gold via Hugh, texted to 989898. Thank you. America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Jim Talent, former senator from Missouri, member of the Bipartisan Policy Center, great friend of the show. Happy New Year, Senator. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Happy New Year to you
and
everybody in the show.
Yesterday, I wrote a piece for the Washington Post declaring that the Chinese Communist Party is our greatest menace. And, of course, state media came after me with their axes and their trolling. And we've had some DOS stuff this morning. They are out to win, Jim. Do you think the country gets it? Ken Follett, the novelist, finally gets it. Wrote a great book about them.
Yeah, I think there's the last 4 or 5 years. Well, really, I think Trump deserves a lot of credit for this. I mean, he sort of dragged our policy into the 21st century regarding China. We ended engagement with them under Trump, although the roots of this, to be fair, were in the Obama administration's rebalance. And he began energizing, you know, the tools of power and reforming and adjusting them so that we could contest with China over what will probably be a generations-long, you know, struggle, at least one, I would think. So, yeah, I think we understand it, but what I don't think we have is the ongoing consistent commitment from, you know, from leadership in Washington to do what we need to do to protect our interests and our security.
And that would mean more of the AUKUS, more of the U.S., U.K., Australia. And I see that Japan is sending their senior defense minister down to Australia for talks. We got to get Indians in that game. And how publicly does Vietnam get into that game with us?
Well, I don't think you want to do it that publicly with Vietnam. I think you want to do a lot of back channeling with Vietnam. And we do that. And you're right. If you want to think of, there's two big pieces. One is continuing to strengthen the alliances. And again, the last couple of administrations have done that. I think AUKUS is probably the best thing, right? You might say the only really good thing we've seen out of the Biden administration this year. Now, where we're not succeeding, you, and we've talked about this all year and we'll talk about it next year, is building up in particular the capacity of the armed forces to strengthen short-term deterrence in Indo-PACOM over the Davidson window. We have to do that, and that's going to include substantial yearly increases in the Department of Defense top line. Which,
Senator, most important question. Does Team Biden have to come out and say, strategic ambiguity was then, this is now, we will defend Taiwan?
I don't think they have to. I think actions speak louder than words here, I think that is one possibility. But if we do what we need to do, if we take the actions we need to take, we probably don't need to do that. If we don't take the actions we need to take, then I don't think doing that is going to deter them, for example, from Taiwan. But yes, it's, you know, I could go either way on that. A lot of experts argue it either way, but we have to back it up. This is, you know, if you want to talk, you can talk softly if you carry a big stick.
You know, a foreign policy giant who you know and I know once told me last year that China would never invade another country. I don't know if that included Taiwan, but do you agree with that? And he put Vietnam down into a category of a one-off bloody their nose, and it bloodied both noses. But do you agree they'll never invade another country but for Taiwan?
Well, I think Taiwan is most likely. But I think if they absorb Taiwan and there are not sufficient costs and consequences imposed, the next thing they're going to be looking at is the Senkakus, which is, what, a couple hundred miles from Taiwan? They declare the entire South China Sea basically as their territorial waters and much of the East China Sea. So, no, I don't agree with that assessment, certainly not with the certainty of it.
And then if they got the Senkakus, that would allow them to throttle world trade and actually be the Middle Kingdom dictating terms to everyone.
Yeah, they can do that, really controlling the South China Sea. But at that point, the alliance structure goes and everything goes. Because the Senkakus are Japanese territory. We would be required by treaty and honor and interest to defend.
The key thing there, by treaty, we are obliged to defend the Senkaku by treaty.
Yeah, because it's, and Obama said that. He said, it's part of Japan. We have to defend Japan, from attacks on their sovereign territory. So what they want in regionally is to break up the alliance structure, exclude the United States, control the East and South China Sea, and determine who can move trade and travel through that region.
And they want to do it one bite at a time, which is the only way to eat an elephant, and we have to deny them the first bite.
I think it's an imperative, yeah.
The first bite was actually Hong Kong, wasn't it?
Right, but I mean, Taiwan is a key. I mean, you know, Bridge Colby's written a lot about this. I agree with Bridge about this piece of it, that I mean, Taiwan is a flashpoint, but it's difficult to defend. But we need to do everything we can to strengthen short-term deterrence so that we can preserve the peace, protect our interests, and also, avoid this kind of a...
Jim, quick question. UAE looks like they're going to withdraw from the F-35 deal. I think the Bidens have screwed up our our closest Arab ally relationship. What do you think?
Yeah, by showing such disrespect to the Abraham Accords, I'm very concerned about that.
That's a glum note. Maybe 2022 will be better. Happy New Year, Jim Talent. Thank you for being a friend of the show, bringing sweet wisdom and reason every week. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, hour three of the Amnesty Show, the last live broadcast of 2021. Anybody can call 1-800-520-1234. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. One of the great discoveries of me in 2020 was my next guest, Len Khodorkovsky. Len was sort of the, I'll call him the online brain of the State Department under Secretary Pompeo and Keith Kroc, the undersecretary. And he's become a good friend. And I saw him in the run-up to Christmas at one of the Beltway parties. And Leonard told me a story that I cannot believe. Len Khodorkovsky, welcome back. You can follow him at Message from Len on Twitter, and you should. I have two objectives, Len. I need you to tell me about my dad and my brother's alma mater, Oberlin. I need you to tell me about your new podcast out of the Middle East.
Well, good morning, Hugh, and thanks for having me back. It was so great to see you the other day. And thanks for the name check with President Trump a couple of weeks ago.
Yep, that was fun.
That was great. I got a lot of positive feedback about that. It was a trip. Well, number one, I think my headline this morning here is American college students in Oberlin College in Ohio are being taught by a former Iranian senior regime official complicit in the 1988 massacre. That's no joke.
Let's repeat that slowly, because Oberlin may be well-known. It's my father's alma mater, very proud of it. It was the first college to admit blacks and women in the United States. Charles Finney was its great progressive evangelical, I guess, leader in the 19th century. It is a storied institution. My brother went there, played football there. My father went there, but it has gone off the cliff. And when you told me this, I said, thank God Dad is in heaven, or he would actually have a heart attack.
Yeah, many people are perturbed by this. But yes, a former senior official named Mohammad Jafar Mahalati, who was the Iranian regime's UN ambassador in the 80s, and complicit in a massacre of about 5,000 Iranian dissidents in the late 80s. And this is not just me saying it. It's Amnesty International saying it, hardly a right-wing operation. He has been granted tenure at Oberlin College in Ohio, where American students pay upward of $80,000 a year in tuition. Really, I should say their parents pay that. And they're being taught by a guy who is deemed, quote-unquote, the professor of peace, who is complicit in a massacre of the, in 1980s.
Now, Len, when I was in the government, when you were a child in the Soviet Union, we would find war criminals and deport them. There was a special department, the Department of Justice, to find war criminals from World War II and deport them for justice. How is this man teaching, much less not being sued by every victim of a victim? Because that is possible under the Alien Tort Claims Act in the United States.
Well, many victims and families of victims have brought this up to Oberlin administration. One of these members of a family of victims, her name is Laudan Bazargan, reached out to me and alerted me to this incredibly insane situation and said that she brought this up to the attention of the administration, the president of Oberlin College named Carmen, I forgot her last name, excuse me. But the president of Oberlin College has basically covered up the complicity of this guy. Carmen Ambar is her name.
I invited President Ambar to be on this show, by the way, and she declined.
I'm not surprised, because when Law Dunn and I wrote an op-ed about this case, pointing it out, and I tagged Carmen Ambar on Twitter, she promptly blocked me, Law Dunn, and everybody else who has brought this up to her attention.
So Oberlin has a war criminal on its faculty. What exactly were the circumstances of the massacre in which he is complicit?
This is actually very timely and interesting as well. In 1988, this is shortly after the Iranian regime takeover in Iran, the Islamic Revolution in Iran, which happened in 79. And of course, folks, remember that the Iranian regime was born in the original sin of taking Americans hostage.
Yeah.
And this is the same regime that rounded up and executed political dissidents to solidify its power. One of these massacres occurred in the late 80s via something called the Death Commission, actual name, which was co-chaired by none other than Ibrahim Raisi, the current president of the Iranian regime. So this death commission sentenced more than 5,000 Iranians to death. It has disappeared, tortured, and committed atrocities on an epic scale. Mohammad Jafar Mahaladi was part of that regime and actively covered up and minimized and spoke on behalf of the actions of that government.
Was he a member of the commission or was he a FLAC?
He was a FLAC. He was not a member of the commission. There were only four chairs. Ibrahim Raisi was one of them. But he was essentially, a guy who was in the United States, comfortably ensconced in his penthouse in New York, who was defending what was being done. Not to mention, the guy is an anti-Semite, an anti-Baha'i, bigot on an epic scale. Now, that in and of itself should disqualify him from a tenured position at Oberlin, but it hasn't.
Is there a record, Len, has Oberlin been presented with a record of his propaganda on behalf of the Death Commission and his other complicities?
Absolutely. And it's been presented by an Amnesty International report about it, which itself named Mahaladi as one of the people complicit in the massacre. So there's no excuse here. In fact, one of our strongest supporters is the Oberlin College student newspaper, which validated the claims. And the students are with us, but the administration wants to play dumb and not hold this guy accountable.
There's a board of trustees at Oberlin. Has every trustee received a packet of his complicity? You're not saying he pulled the trigger. You're not saying he actually killed anyone. You're saying he helped cover it up and propagandize its consequences away.
That's right. I believe the packet has been sent, but let me just, put it in perspective. Assume this was happening in the 1930s or 40s or just after World War II, and we had a senior Nazi official who was excusing the Holocaust somewhere in the world. Would he get tenure in Oberlin? This is exactly the same insanity that's driving this, which makes no sense. And let me just point out that this is not an isolated case in Oberlin. Princeton has another senior Iranian official as a tenured professor in its Near East program, who was likewise a senior diplomat, quote unquote, in Germany in the 1990s. Under whose watch an assassination took place of four Iranian dissidents. Four Iranian diplomats were bounced out of Germany in the 1990s. This guy had to leave. And as a reward, he got tenure in Princeton. His name is Sayed Hussein Mousavi. So there's a problem in our places of higher learning, which turns a blind eye to these criminals on an epic scale.
I'm talking with Len Kordakovsky, a veteran of the State Department. Now you can follow him on Twitter at Message from Len. Why do woke faculties, Leonard, in your opinion, put up with killers of the Islamist Mullah regime and not with conservatives. I mean, what is wrong? What is wrong with America faculty that they do not raise a hue and cry about Islamist regime allied killers and propagandists, but they do get concerned about center right faculty members?
Well, I think you said it there. I think they're threatened by conservatism more than terrorism. That's unfortunate. But the perspective in those bubbles is so skewed that that someone who challenges the wokeness of those institutions is a bigger threat than terrorists. Actually. Sanctioned by the American State Department across multiple administrations, not just Republican administrations.
Well, I think alumni have to stop giving to Oberlin and Princeton, and I think they need to bring resolutions to the Board of Trustees, because you're not going to move the president. She's obviously gone to ground. Len, before we run out of time, we got 2 minutes. I want to know about this new podcast as well.
Well, thanks for that. But one last note on the Oberlin. I would love for Congressman Jordan and Senator Portman and the entire Ohio delegation to hold Oberlin accountable and ask why Ohio parents have to pay exorbitant tuition for their kids to be taught by an international criminal.
Now, Oberlin's private, but it's still useful to throw a spotlight on a private institution.
Absolutely. Let's have them explain themselves.
Yeah.
So about this other project that I'm working on, and thanks for mentioning it. It's called Yalla, and basically Yalla is a new show that's in Arabic, and it's aimed at an Arabic audience in the Middle East, essentially to advance the idea of everything that's possible as a result of the Abraham Accords. Abraham Accords has been a game changer in the region. The things that are now possible for the Arab public and the next generation of Arab leaders is historic. And one of the things that we'd like to do is open up and provide a voice for the Arab public to understand what's possible, how much is possible, to tap into their hopes and dreams and help them realize those dreams and be the voice for their incredible stories. The Middle East is turning into the most interesting and dynamic neighborhood in the world.
Leonard, your Twitter handle is Message from Len. You got lots of followers. What is the Yalla Twitter handle?
Yalla is at Watch Yalla. Watch, Y-A-L-L-A.
Y-A-L-L-A. Watch, Y-A-L-L-A. Watch Yalla.
Correct.
And Message from Len. Len, Happy New Year to you. I hope you will be back early and often in 2022. I hope someone in Oberlin is listening this morning and that they realize that they're working for a college that is actually depraved. I think that's a measure of depravity to keep people like that in tenured position. Now, they have freedom of speech, but that doesn't mean consequences ought to be obliterated from the past. I believe in tenure, but I do not believe in hiding war criminals. And I believe that term is justifiably applied. Do you?
Of course. Of course. Americans should be held accountable. So should former Iranian regime officials complicit in massacres.
Well said. Len Kordakovsky, thank you and Happy New Year, my friend. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, the last live guest of the last live radio show of 2021 is my friend Josh Kroshauer of the National Journal. Follow him on Twitter at Hotline Josh. Good morning, Josh.
Thanks, Hugh. I'm honored to close out 2021.
You are closing out 2021. Here is my my request, Josh. I'm writing a column for the Post for the first column of 2022, and I've listed the likely Republican candidates who will be out there working the hustings in anticipation of President Trump not running. Now, I think if Trump runs, he gets the nomination. But I think he may not want to grow old in front of people. So my list is thus. Senator, in alphabetic order, Senator Tom Cotton, Senator Ted Cruz, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Florida Senator Rick Scott, and South Carolina Senator Rick Scott. I mean, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott and Florida Senator Rick Scott. So my question is, I know Chris Christie's going to run regardless. I don't have him in the top tier anymore because I think it's going to be tough for him, given what he said about Trump. But who do you – have I forgotten anyone?
Yeah, so my top tier – I don't know. I'm not sure if you mentioned Vice President Pence. I would put him in the top tier. I'd put Ron DeSantis in the top tier. I'd put Ted Cruz in the top tier if Trump doesn't run. You know, I actually think Tim Scott is someone to watch. You mentioned him. I'm not sure about Rick Scott, but Tim Scott – is someone who I think is worth paying a lot of attention to. Nikki Haley, maybe second tier, but I she's in that space as well. But you know, I think everyone else is sort of going to need to have a moment. Going to need a, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, I think Senator Cotton has really distinguished himself on the conservative side in the Senate. But I'm not sure if he has the political staying power nationally. I think he might position himself as a Secretary of Defense type candidate if he runs. But
you know, David Axelrod, who I quote, always said we elect the emotional opposite of the president that we've got. So the austere intellectual brainy Cotton and the same goes for Pompeo and who's our other Ivy Leaguer in there, Ivy League law school person that's in the Ted Cruz. To be very, very smart and on top of your game, acuity-wise, that would be the opposite of Joe Biden.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I have a sort of an old-school view of politics in that I think you need a – charisma still matters. You need to still campaign in New Hampshire. If it's not Trump, New Hampshire, Iowa, you need to have a little skill in retail politics. So, I mean, DeSantis has a national star power. He's going to be really formidable if Trump doesn't run.
I agree with that, but do you think there's a little Scott Walker problem there? You really don't want to be the front runner a year ahead of voting?
Yeah, I mean, it's early, and I think DeSantis has vulnerabilities, too. He's a little bit prickly. Which plays well with conservatives, no doubt.
Yep.
We've talked about this on the show. But if you're doing glad handling, if you're talking to voters, shaking hands in Manchester or Nashua, does that translate in those early states? So I think those are questions that the early states still matter. The skills that it takes to do well at retail politics still matter. And I think we've still viewed this in a national lens a little more than the real state by state.
Yeah, Josh, I've known Ron DeSantis a long time. He was not originally prickly, but I believe he has always been a skilled politician. He picked up that a lot of the Republican Party wants combativeness. That goes back to Newt Gingrich in 2012, kind of displayed that our party doesn't like to get slapped around by the media. I mean, they hate it, and they're not going to put up with it anymore.
Yeah, I get it. I've had friendly interviews with Republicans who just attack me because I'm a member of the media, and they're doing it for performative reasons. I mean, I get it. But I also think the unique thing about presidential politics is you still have to go to a town hall in Manchester.
You still have to
meet with 20 voters in Iowa, and that's a different skill set, and it still matters in winning over those Republicans.
You know who's getting huge crowds, and I have this verified, is Pompeo is blowing the doors off of venues in Iowa. I'm kind of surprised by that because he's a foreign policy guy, right? He got some retail politics skill, but he's a foreign policy guy, and he's got. I just shows that there's an appetite in the Republican base that is enormous.
Yeah, I mean, look, Pompeo is starting earlier than almost anyone. He's clearly preparing for a presidential run. You know, yeah, he's a House member, Secretary of State. He has name ID. I think he has a little bit more of a hurdle than some of the other folks. I was talking to a really, really high-level Republican strategist a couple weeks ago, and he made a good point that he said there are three parts of the Republican Party. There's a third of the party that wants someone who's electable, a third of the party who wants someone who's conservative, and a third of the party wants someone who's loyal to Trump, who's kind of a Trump guy. You need to get two of those three. You need to find someone who matches.
That's a good analysis.
Yeah, and he pointed to some. I mean, a lot of the names we just talked about.
Run through those thirds again, Josh. What those thirds are?
Yeah, so electable, kind of like Glenn Youngkin. I mean, that's one third of the voters. Conservative, you know, checks all the boxes ideologically.
Small government, national security, religious freedom. Yep.
Exactly, and then the Trumpy, the people who just want someone who's loyal to Trump. that's another third of the party. And if you can get two of those three, do well on two of those three, that's the ticket to success.
Are you writing that up? That's a good column. I might steal that.
It's coming in the new year.
Okay, I might steal that, Josh. I'll let you go first because it was yours. Happy New Year. Hotline Josh. You ought to be following him on Twitter and reading everything that he writes. Hotline Josh for the National Journal. Happy New Year to Adam and to Ben and to Dwayne and to Harley and to everyone down the line from Ed Atzinger and Dave Centrella and Phil Boyce and all the GMs and all the Marriott board screeners in Dallas and traffic control. Happy New Year to you all. Talk to you in 2022. Larry Arn tomorrow on the last Hugh Hewitt Show of 2021.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.